The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Friends, welcome once again to the program Afternoons with Mike. It's a joy to be with you as we are at this time of day around the Shepherd Radio Network. And I am privileged to be joined in the studio today by Tim McKinney. Now, Tim is representing United Global Outreach. He's the CEO of this organization, and he also leads through that the Bithlow Transformation Effort. Now, those are some things that I want to know about, because people who have been in Orlando for any time at all would know that Bithlow is an outlying community on the east side of Orlando off of 50. I guess 50 runs right through the heart of it.
Right, way far east, Orange County.
Yeah, way far east, but still in Orange County. And it's great to have you here with us today, Tim.
Well, it's fantastic to be here, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's, again, a real pleasure to find out about UGO, and you do call your organization often with that acronym.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So tell us, first of all, a little bit about yourself. How did you come to know the Lord? Where you grew up?
Well, I'm a lifelong resident of Orlando. Grew up in Conway. My mom's side moved here in 1924. My dad's side, 1954. Really, my goal growing up was to be involved in baseball. I started Little League when I was 7 years old, played at Conway Little League, realized very quickly that I had to work really hard to be really terrible. my brother, not so. He didn't have to work hard at all, and he was always an all-star. So anyway, I actually segued into umpiring, and even while I was at the Little League, I became chief umpire, joined the board at 16, and went to professional umpire school after graduating high school. And was actually recruited out of umpire school to work at what was Boardwalk and Baseball at the time.
Oh, yeah, so when they opened that up.
I was one of the inaugural umpires there. And so that was really fantastic and unique experience, because I got to do, at 19 years old, Major League spring training games and Big East ACC championship college games and just some really exciting things there. But it was during that time that I went to an Easter program at Orlando Baptist Church that I recognize that even though I had gone to church, grown up in church for a period of time when I was young, that I really hadn't made a personal commitment to Jesus Christ. So I accepted Christ as my Savior, and things in my heart started to change, and really priorities started to shift and adjust at that time. And so I ended up volunteering, if you will, to go into full-time ministry. And at that time, I ended up joining the staff of Orlando Baptist Church.
Okay. And that's a fast track right into ministry.
In my early 20s.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's incredible. Yeah. Now, going back, if you will, to your beginnings, that realization that you made at the beginning of your faith walk is not an uncommon thing at all. People growing up in service, yet needing to come to that point where they, as you did, recognize that I need a personal experience with the Lord, and He is always faithful to give us that.
Absolutely. And then, of course, it was transformational, because then you really realize what is important and what's not important in life. And I had the benefit of some great mentorship. My pastor at the time, David Janney, was an excellent inspiration to me. And really, it was those early days where we started working in underserved communities around the world that really, I think, shaped the work that I'm doing now, because I recognize that if you don't have an advocate, and you're unable to speak up for yourself, that life can be very terrible for you. And so back then we founded Hope for the World, which is actually still going strong, but there's another division that split off that became World Hope. And so that international experience as a young person, going to Albania right after communism collapsed in the early 90s to just really helped shape my global perspective that, the world is not just the home of Mickey Mouse. There's so much more happening.
Yeah. You know, when you travel out of the bounds of the U.S., it's always been something to where when you go out, as a even if it's a short-term missions trip, I find that I change more than I'm able to affect any change in that area. It really is a wonderful experience for a person to take a short-term missions trip. Before you said that you went to Albania, I was just getting ready to ask you if you had had an opportunity to go out on one of those missions trips.
Yeah, I mean, I, of course, we formed this organization before I'd ever traveled out of the country, but then we went to Albania after communism collapsed. There was a real void because the government had sustained orphanages throughout the country, and suddenly they had no support or resources. Mm-hmm. So David, through Hope for the World at the time, now World Hope, really leveraged a bunch of churches to go to Albania. So I went on that first trip as early 20s, maybe 20, 21 years old. And we literally went across the country and took over the orphanages. And actually that work is still going strong today. I was just there in the fall of 2019, mm-hmm. pre-COVID, to mm-hmm. go back and visit some of those sites. In fact, the mayor of Tirana, Albania, the capital, was an orphan in one of our orphanages.
Isn't that something?
Pretty incredible.
Grew up and became the mayor. That is something else. You know, when you look back on that, in that first trip, when you have the memory time and you're sitting and you're thinking about it, what bubbles up first in your mind? What was the most memorable thing that you can recall that happened to you in that trip?
Well, my interpreter was a guy named Amin Toro. So he was just probably 17 years old, so just a few years younger than me. And I remember he kept in his back pocket a little cartoon that ran in the paper with a picture of Uncle Sam holding a rocket launcher on the peninsula of Florida aimed at the United States. And the dictator really had the people constantly in fear that the U.S. was going to obliviate Albania on any given day. And so there was this oppression. In fact, Albania was one of the, I think, the only communist country that by constitution there was no God. So it was just total control. And you could look across the mountainsides and see these little concrete huts mm-hmm. where he just had people convinced that they need to be prepared on a second's notice to dive into those concrete huts to protect themselves from the United States.
From world disaster. Yeah, it went both ways. I tell you, the fear of that era was a huge thing. I grew up thinking that we may have to do the same thing in all the fallout shelters of the 60s that were popping up all over the United States during, obviously, the Cuban Missile Crisis. So a lot of Americans can relate to what you're talking about.
Quick segue, fast forward these decades, and actually I was just with Amin recently. President Trump nominated him to the federal tax court. So he went from that day to the relationships built then to being sponsored to come to Palm Beach Atlantic, going to law school, ultimately clerking for Judge Thomas with the Supreme Court. And now he's a judge in one of our highest courts in the land.
Mm.
So I'm reminded based on that experience that destinies can be altered forever if you interact with someone at the right place at the right time.
And we never know when that's going to happen.
We never know. So we have to be prepared.
That's right. We have to have not only our minds open and watching, I think being alert is a big deal, but a heart preparation needs to happen as well. And it is a wake-up time, I think, for Americans right now to say, God, there's a lot stirring in the country. There's a lot going on. There's, as you mentioned, with those people over there, a lot of fear, and a lot of it is unfounded, but there are some really fearful things as well to be afraid of if one is going to be afraid.
Absolutely.
But we can put our faith and trust in God, and I think that heart change is a really important thing.
No doubt about it.
Yeah. So you're now a young man in your 20s, and you're growing. How did that develop through your love for this outreach and your thoughts for your future? Did you see yourself staying in this? Is that what you thought would happen?
No, absolutely not. Actually, I segued from time in ministry to going out into mortgage banking and ended up having a very successful mortgage banking business. In fact, I was blessed to have a limo and a driver for 10 or 11 years straight. And so really, I felt like I was on a trajectory to, you know, make a ton of money, do mm-hmm. a lot of good by, you know, using those resources and make an impact in that way. So I kept in touch with the things that were happening, but really for that 10 or 12 years, I was disconnected from daily involvement in that type of work.
What brought you back?
So my great aunt, who when I was 7 or 8 years old, quit her job as a nurse at Florida Hospital to take care of my great grandmother, was diagnosed with or was told by the doctor she had 3 months to live about her 92nd birthday. Mm. She was one of 8 kids, didn't have children of her own, kind of gravitated toward my grandpa's family. So we were very close to her. Her name was Dorothy. And when she got this diagnosis, I remembered her quitting her job, and she really spent her whole life moving into other people's houses, taking care of their family members till they passed away. And she did that into her 80s, really a life of service. So I didn't feel like it would be right for her to go to a nursing home. So I invited her to live in my house. I had a big house at the time and reopened our country club and decided to move in, thinking, hey, this old lady is not going to want to hang out with me. I'm not going to want to hang out with her, but I can at least set her up in a safe space where she can be comfortable and taken care of. And I say when I give talks, a manicure, a pedicure, and a pacemaker, and she lived almost 4 more years.
Oh, wow.
So what really wasn't that, what I didn't intend to be that life transforming turned out to be all encompassing, because I became her 24/7 caregiver for those almost 4 years. Mm-hmm. When I took her in, I had a large office and a lot of loan officers and really didn't have to be in the office every day. But about a year into that 3-month commitment was our, the financial markets crashed on a weekend, and that led us to the Great Recession. And then ultimately she outlived all of my resources. And by the time she was powering down, I literally was feeling emotionally, spiritually, and financially depleted, and really didn't have an idea what I was going to do next with my life.
Mm-hmm. And what was the wake-up call?
Well, I had a coffee with my best friend, Tony Calico, and we were talking, and I was, you know, just telling him, man, I feel like too tired to start another business. I don't want to go back in the mortgage business. That things have changed, and I just don't have the heart for it. And he basically is an upstate New York Italian, you know, think the Sopranos and the Godfather mixed. And he said to me, Tim, every time I come to Orlando, you're always telling me your mom went to school here, your dad went to school here, you know, your grandpa grew up here. He said, why don't you find a community here that needs help and help them until you figure out what you want to do with your life? And I realized, looking back on that conversation, he was saying to me, get your eyes off your own problems and focus on helping other people, and let's see what things could happen.
Did that kind of thought hit your mind, or was that like confirmation for you when you were helping the person you had in your home?
You know, it was a reaffirmation of what I knew to be true. But if you don't have an advocate, she had Alzheimer's and some other serious issues. So if it weren't for my mom helping her navigate the healthcare system and the doctors, and then me taking care of the practical things, you know, she could have been that person in the nursing home crying for help every day that no longer is heard because they're crying for help every day. And so it made me realize, if you don't have an advocate and you can't advocate for yourself, life can be very terrible for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so in doing so, I evaluated where are a couple of communities that have the toughest, you know, reputations in town. Maybe I'll start there. That might have been my ego thinking, you know, we'll come in and save the day. And Bithlow, which I really hadn't spent any time in, I had known as having a negative reputation, but I had no idea why. And so I mentioned that to Tony, and he said, we know a pastor in Bithlow. I go, we do. You know, and it turned out a guy named Frank Stevenson, who lived in Winter Park, that I didn't even know was a pastor. I knew him as doing just lay jail ministry, had been pastoring this little tiny church of about 6 folks out in Bithlow for the previous 8 years.
How did that, do you think, come to be? How did this reputation that you're talking about, what would be the reasons for that?
Well, once I went out and talked to Pastor Frank and started talking to residents about why Bithlow had become a tough community to grow up in for so many, and I started to hear about things like contaminated drinking water, or at least horrible water quality, hundreds of acres of junkyards, illegal dumps, gas stations that had leaked into the groundwater, some people living in trailers that were decades old, so they themselves had become unhealthy places to live. There was no public transportation to Bithlow at the time, no doctor, dentist, optometrist, psychiatrist in the neighborhood. Just structural things were not working right there.
Now, the thing, if I can interrupt you on that, because I'd like for you to address this. This is still part of Orange County.
Correct.
And I think a lot of people, let's say that someone's listening today that's just moved down from the Northeast, And they're hearing about this. And I thought, well, what marked Biffalo being any different than any other little community in the outlying area of Orlando? And they're hearing this. And I would think they would say, how can that happen?
Well, actually, it's a very unique situation in the fact that it was an incorporated city back in the early 1900s. So some would say it was maybe more booming than Orlando back then. Orlando was a very small town pre-Disney.
Oh, it was.
And so Biffalo was the height of cattle, turpentine factories, lumber mills. It was right on the Flagler Railroad. And there were some Boston real estate developers that started selling land in Biffalo, moved from, you know, cold, freezing Boston to sunny Biffalo, Florida. And so the town had a boom. The town took out bonds to pay for this rapid growth. And then our country went through a national depression, you know, the Great Depression.
Sure.
And so people stopped closing on real estate in Biffalo from Boston and other places. And therefore, the town literally went bankrupt. But worse than going bankrupt and out of business, that 12 square mile incorporated city of Biffalo just stopped operating in the governance realm. So it was about 1941 when they elected their last mayor and city council. And so from 1941 forward, there was no governance in that area. So that's really how all of this happened. If you weren't allowed to have a junkyard or a dump in Orange County or the city of Orlando or Winter Park, you did it in that city of Biffalo footprint because there was nobody to tell you not to, actually.
And you're saying there was no police protection?
No, there literally, it was lawless in the sense of governance and structure.
You know, I lived here from 85 to 2002 in Orlando, and I never knew that.
Sure. That doesn't mean the sheriff wouldn't come in and enforce the laws, but there weren't the zoning, the normal restrictions that would monitor things so that things could develop properly in a community.
What do you think the leaders at the time, let's say from Orlando or Altamont Springs or Winter Park, I mean, would they have been aware of this lawlessness that you're talking about?
I think actually no, because at the time to get from Orlando to Biffalo took a long time because there was no major highways, no expressway to get there. Mm-hmm. It was really way out there. Now you can get from downtown Orlando to Biffalo in, you know, 20, 25 minutes. So I think in large part there wasn't awareness of what was happening. But in the 70s, I've heard the story, there was like a large tire fire, you know, so maybe the black smoke blew into town. People became aware of, wow, what's going on out there? I mean, this is a problem that needs to be addressed. The legislature addressed it by unincorporating the charter of the city in the hopes that Orange County would take over responsibility. Orange County government was hesitant to take over responsibility because they didn't want to assume the debts of the city of Biffalo. And so it was the courts that resolved the issue in the 80s, basically saying, Orange County, you're not responsible for the debts of the city of Biffalo, but you are responsible for the governance of the area. But by then, really, all of this had been set in motion, the junkyards, the dumps, the lack of proper planning for streets and drainage and all of that was really set in place.
Tim McKinney is my guest today from United Global Outreach. We'll be back with him coming up in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd.
Have you been considering a new career path? Do you miss that feeling of making a real difference? As Florida's top Christian college, Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando can help you get there. And you can find out more in person on Saturday, May 22nd at 10 a.m. This free event gives you a chance to see all that you can become through Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando. PBA's Orlando campus is just off I-4 next to the Mall of Millennia. Call them today at 844-PBA-ORLANDO. That's 844-PBA-ORLANDO. Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando. Education for your soul as well as your mind.
It's our honor to have Tim McKinney from United Global Outreach with us today on the program, hearing this fascinating story, and it's a bit of a shocking story for me personally, hearing about the community that we all know and have heard about. It's called Biffalo, and it's to the east of Orlando. And some of the lack of regulation, lack of governmental control, lack of governance is the phrase that you use, and I think that's a good way to say it. basically it became known to many as a freewheeling, like you said, if you had things that you wanted to get rid of, open dumping for years. How long do you think that went on?
Oh, for decades. I mean, there's an illegal dump that Mayor Linda Chapin almost 30 years ago thought was such a concern for the public's health that she ordered it cleaned up, closed and cleaned up almost 30 years ago, and it still remains today.
Isn't that something?
Uncleaned up.
This is all news to me. I did not know.
By the way, in no way am I saying that all the residents of Bithla are suffering from poverty or generational poverty. It's a beautiful part of our county. There's acreage. You know, you can have space. You can have wildlife. But in the core, there's just a core pocket of a dense population that really the systems are not working properly or were not working properly. Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned a fire with basically tires. I think I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, it was like a million tires. It was some outrageous, you know, amount of tires, which, again, is an environmental hazard to not. So this is what I try to point out to folks. The issues happening in Bithlo don't just affect Bithlo. Mm-hmm. So if the water quality is not good or there's groundwater contamination, the water in Bithlo is in the Econ River Basin, flows to the Econ River that goes to the St. John's River. So black smoke from tires that catch fire affect all of our respiratory quality of life, you know? So again, we can't just ignore the issues happening in Bithlo because it's not in the urban core. You know, it's been out of sight, out of mind for so long, but, you know, people ask me often, you know, what motivates you to work in a community you didn't know anybody in and didn't have a relationship before. And I really can't help but wonder, what if my single mom had raised my little brother and I just 20 miles east? How different would my life be today just because of the neighborhood that I was born in and the structural things that weren't working right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you drink water from a well that's contaminated and it depletes the calcium from your body and your teeth are busted by the time you're in the eighth grade, everything about your life is different. Doesn't matter how smart you are, doesn't matter how ambitious you are. If you have bad teeth, life's going to be different for you for a variety of reasons.
And you're saying that went on regularly.
Absolutely.
Wow. I'm sorry, but I just did not realize that the problem was as pervasive as what you're describing.
Yeah. So through no fault of your own, destiny could, you know, your trajectory could be set just simply because of the neighborhood that you were born and grew up in. And that's unjust. That's not fair. We're working to fix that.
Okay, you mentioned now having a sense of advocacy over this area and wanting to make a difference. Obviously, I know you would have been in touch with the leaders of Orange County, and you've even mentioned historically 30 years ago, Mayor Chapin, I believe you said it was, that made efforts. But those efforts, those initiatives still haven't been completed or, you know, kind of been, let's say, brought back into the place where they should have been.
To the county's credit, they did try to start some initiatives and address some of these issues. But one of the mistakes that was made is they didn't first build relationships. So they, you know, identified a problem, started to address it, but then had pushback from the residents because they had no relationship. And there was such distrust because of these decades of neglect and overlook that really there was a pushback. So I think what's unique in the work that we're doing is we didn't come and impose a program, and we also really didn't know we didn't have the expertise in any of the areas that needed to be addressed candidly. Mm-hmm. But we did know that if we could exercise our ability to build relationships, which really is what helped me to be successful in ministry and also in the mortgage banking business, then we could leverage the resources and get the experts in that did have the expertise to solve these problems. And then we could help the residents to understand that if, you know, you have the same basic access to healthcare, for example, or the dentist or safe housing, public transportation, sidewalk, streetlights, all of those things, then you don't need a program either. You just grow up like everybody else does and you become successful. And in fact, it was after hearing about all of the things going on in Bithlo that I went to the Starbucks on Edgewater Drive and College Park. My mom went to Edgewater High School, and I was just sitting there going, you know, how is it that I'm sitting here on a main highway in one of our most prestigious communities, and I don't feel like things are wrong? But when I was in Bithlo just a day or two earlier, things didn't seem right in the area that I was working in and talking with folks. And so it was on the back of a Starbucks napkin that I jotted down some areas that I thought, if we could evaluate these things and maybe make sure these things are working right, then maybe Bithlo could be a healthy community just like College Park or Thornton Park or Winter Park. And so I jotted down education, transportation, housing, basic needs, which include social services, healthcare, the environment. We've since added economic opportunity in the arts and athletics. And then the most important component, building a sense of community. So really, these are our nine areas of focus. And if all of these can be addressed simultaneously, we're convinced now 12 years later that we don't have to have poor neighborhoods. We don't have to have challenged, underserved communities. We can actually transform communities so that every person has an equal opportunity to succeed. And so time will tell if it'll work out, but we've made some dramatic progress in a lot of ways.
Now, would the people who actually are the residents of Bithlo, would they have been aware of the severity of these issues prior to your organization going in and kind of putting a spotlight on it?
Well, I mean, clearly, you know, if you turn on the sink and the water's brown, you know, you're aware you've got brown water. But if things have always been that way, you know, if you're under 30 years old and you live in Bithlo, do you know that an illegal dump shouldn't be in your neighborhood, or even that there is a dump in your neighborhood? Because it doesn't look like a dump anymore. It's got trees growing out of it and vines over it. So I think there was a recognition on our part that folks are in survival mode, you know, versus try to pull them out of that and put them in some leadership academy like might happen in other neighborhoods. It was, why don't we just impose the golden rule? If I'm not okay with brown water, I'm going to make the assumption that a Bithlo resident's not okay with groundwater or with brown water.
Right.
If I'm not okay with not having access to the doctor in the neighborhood, let's make the assumption that a Bithlo resident would like to have a doctor in the neighborhood. And so we really put that framework in place and just went to work on some of these deep structural issues while trying to provide some of the short-term, you know, basic needs, access to food, you know.
Safe water.
All of those things, yeah.
Yeah, because you think about safe water, I know there's a lot of organizations like the group that is called Unto from Crew, and they go into countries where there is no water or not safe water, and they're able to dig wells. Many of them would have been drinking from shallow pools where the water could be contaminated, and it's just not safe, and a lot of disease happens as a result of that. It's hard to get my brain around that what you're describing is not that far from this, that people would open the sink faucet, turn it on, and brown water comes out.
Yeah, because of the high number of junkyards and other things happening, the levels of iron and manganese in particular are extremely high there. So again, recognizing, you know, what's behind the scenes to create the situation, you know, if your water's like that, it's so hard. Again, it can affect your teeth. Your hair may look like you don't wash it, even if you wash it every day. Your white shirts turn orange, you know, after washing them a couple of times. So you think about, if every day is like that, then how can I possibly get up and take the world by storm and become a success? So we wanted to try to really start to work on chipping away at all of these deep structural things so that they could eventually be resolved, and again, people could just maintain a normal life.
Are you guys who are working as advocates now for this area, are you taking it beyond the local government, let's say, to statewide?
Well, I mean, of course it touches every level of government because there's different jurisdictions that have a play. But really, as important as government is, and government should do, in our mind, public safety and then infrastructure. So, you know, government should ensure, you know, roads, bridges, sidewalks, streetlights, and public safety. But we really should depend on the private sector and those of us of goodwill to handle the social circumstances. So I think our approach has been different in the sense that we're not asking the government to solve every problem. We're calling on broad partners like Florida Hospital, now Advent Health, who said, hey, listen, we care about communities beyond the walls of our hospital, like Rotary and Kiwanis, like dozens of churches now, like actually groups have come on mission trips to Bithlo from 32 states, I think, and as far away as Seattle and Portland.
This is shocking to me. I had no idea this was going on.
We've done a lot of rallying of the troops.
Well, Boy, sounds like you guys are doing a wonderful thing. Now, you're drawing attention to a local area that is needing the same kind of help, same kind of correction, the same kind of deliverance, really, from natural resource problems like water, a need for better water, a need to have these chemicals that are adding dangerous metals into the soil. All of that is very reminiscent of what we would hear in a third world country that has gone for decades or maybe even a century with no governance at all and no resource management at all.
Right. And it, you know, this could be resolved instantly if you had enough resources to dig a very deep well in a sophisticated filtration system. So some people do have quality water. But again, when you combine generational poverty, your wells are shallow, you don't have filtration, and you end up in this situation. So beyond the water, of course, it's you also have to have safe housing. You know, there's all of these things have to be working properly in order for a community to be a healthy place to live.
I think this would be a good place for me to dive into the name. Why did you choose United Global Outreach as your name?
Well, it's actually another God thing. Maybe when I had the mortgage banking business, my buddy Tony that I mentioned earlier came to me. Our other friend, Bob Hosh, had created a nonprofit for another purpose called United Global Outreach. And he had become so busy in his practice, law practice, that he didn't have time to do anything with it. So he said to Tony, who was a missionary for 25 years at that point to the Roma, the gypsies in Romania, you know, hey, do you want to take this nonprofit and do something with it? Tony brought it to me and said, listen, we got to get the IRS reporting up to speed and all of that stuff. So I helped him with that. And then, you know, it kind of sat on a shelf. And so fast forward to when I was looking to engage in the Bithlo community, I said to Tony, whatever happened with that nonprofit that I helped straighten out back in the day? And he said, I really haven't done anything worth it. So we assumed that vehicle to go into that community to start this work because we knew we needed an entity like a nonprofit to do the things that we were doing. So I feel like God in his foreknowledge had even put the organizational structure in place at the time that we needed it to be ready to start doing the work.
That's amazing that everything was right there and ready to go, and you were able to jump in on that and use it, and it's all up to date. And
I mean,
it's ready.
Even the property that we started to, we knew we needed a local footprint, a base of operation, and Pastor Frank was pastoring this church I mentioned, but literally the power was about to be shut off when I met him. The grass was 3 feet high. The community really thought this church was out of business because it was looking so bad. And what it basically was happening was some elderly folks didn't have the financial resources or the physical strength anymore to fulfill their desire, which was to impact the community. You know, the church had been there since 1950. And so Pastor Frank coming to Bithlo 7 or 8 years earlier, I think, again, God in his foreknowledge was holding that physical place for the work that would happen as a result of it. And so that property was donated to United Global Outreach. We made an arrangement with the church that we would improve it as long as they were a church they could meet there, which we honored that commitment. Pastor Frank passed away a little over a year ago now. All of those members have died, but they died knowing that the resources that they had invested in for decades were actually going to result in seeing that community transformed.
Not only going forward as a church, but also helping the area and these other real need, practical needs that exist and still do exist. Because I would just hearing this, I'm only imagining that the bulk of work is yet to be done in this area.
I mean, some tremendous things have happened, you know, thanks to Congressman John Mica. There's a $15 million bridge that provides a safe way to cross the Yukon River, which wasn't there before. It used to be nowhere to walk or ride your bike for 200 feet. There's a lot of infrastructure, sidewalk, streetlight construction happening. Community health centers has opened a primary health care clinic in Bithlo, which was in a modular unit up until, as we speak, actually an almost $4 million permanent building is being built. So 12 years ago, there was no doctor, dentist, optometrist, pharmacist, behavioral health in Bithlo. In the new community health center building, there'll be all of those things under one roof.
Wow.
You know, some 9,000 unique patients have gone to see the doctor in the neighborhood. We've been able to acquire adjacent properties to the First Baptist Church of Bithlow, three buildings that we initially acquired. So we've got a little over 2.5 acres, which we call Transformation Village. So we're really developing a mini downtown for the community, a couple of aquaponic systems, playgrounds, coffee shop, library, model small house that we designed, which I'd love to talk about in a second, community center. In fact, last Sunday, Pastor Dale Brooks, who used to pastor Avalon Church, launched the new church at Transformation Village. So I'm told they had about 60 people for their first service.
That is wonderful. Yeah. That's great. Now, go ahead and mention what you're talking about with the library.
Well, behind our community coffee shop and library, in fact, I welcome anybody that's interested in knowing more to come and take a tour. I love to give a tour of what we're doing. But we designed a model small house with the idea that eventually we could systematically replace unsafe trailers that are really not healthy to live in, but they're also not great when the hurricanes and tornadoes and other things come. A similar size structure that meets all the building codes, that is of the quality that you or I would want to live in ourselves, that can be assembled by volunteers. In fact, Orlando Baptist Church teenagers and a college in Michigan, college students, literally framed the whole house up in what would have been 2 days if we'd done it all at the same time because of the way we designed it to be assembled. It's just a really cool and unique thing. And in fact, we just completed it. It was really 4 years in the making, having not been a home builder and not knowing anything about home building. I don't even change the oil in my own truck. it was more challenging than I thought to design a house. But having completed it, recently, the developer of Avalon Park, Bayat Cali, took a tour, and he loved it so much, he has committed to funding the construction of 10 more of them and helping us purchase the land to build our first small house village.
Tim McKinney from United Global Outreach, my guest today. We'll be back with him with one more segment coming up here on Afternoons with Mike.
Are you looking to make a fresh career start? As Florida's top Christian college, Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando knows your faith is important to you, and it should be to your school as well. PBA Orlando offers a faith-based experience unlike any other. Whether it's a degree in leadership ministry or counseling, PBA combines biblical concepts from exceptional professors who bring years of real-world experience as leaders in their fields. Call them today at 844-PBA-ORLANDO. That's 844-PBA-ORLANDO. Education for your soul as well as your mind.
My guest today is Tim McKinney from United Global Outreach. A rather shocking interview for me, and really mind-exploding facts and realities that right in our backyard in the east part, far east part of Orange County, on the way really to the coast from Highway 50. Take it right through. You'll go through the community of Bithlow, and I just had no idea. So this residential plan sounds like it could really be a good help.
It'll be great to be able to offer our families, especially the students in our school, an opportunity to have safe, quality, affordable housing in the community.
In the community, and aiming at having all of the other resources like safe water and the power needs are being met and all of that.
A work in progress on all of the above, but in the short term, you can now come to Transformation Village and fill up your water jugs with clean water and not have to pay for it.
Wow. My guest today is Tim McKinney with United Global Outreach. And really, to me, eye-popping news. I just did not know all of this was going on or had gone on. So really glad to have been informed about it. And friends, that's something we can all not only jump in and help, but we can also pray for this organization that is really doing a marvelous work, trying to put their arms around the residents of this community. And it's a community right here in our backyard. So let's do that. Let's pray for them. My question to begin this, and then I know I want us to get into the housing issue, but would the residents over these past number of years, would they have been, I know we talked about, yeah, they're aware because they see the water. Would they be aware right now of all the work that's going on with advocates like yourself?
Oh, I think so. I think, in fact, I just want to clarify, it's not the way things are, but maybe more so the way they were. Not to say that everything's great now, but there's definitely been a tangible transformation because, again, people are going to the doctor, the dentist, the optometrist, the public transportation's in place. You know, infrastructure's starting to take shape so that people can literally succeed and perform on their own. And then thousands of people have come to community meals and events and things that we hold on a regular and consistent basis. So that sense of community is really much more felt than I really would have felt it in the early days. So I think there's a tangible transformation happening. And so I want to make sure the messaging is not, woe is me, how bad things are, but really how hopeful things are.
That's wonderful.
And how incredibly exciting things are, and how wonderful the residents of that community are. Because having never had a friend in Bithlow previous to 12 years ago, you know, some of my deepest, most important relationships are in Bithlow, because the people are so wonderful and they're so incredible. And there's a desire to be, do, and live normal lives and to move on with things. And I forgot to mention, really, one of the jewels of the work that we're doing is we opened a private school called Orange County Academy. We're in our 11th year. And so we've graduated five seniors. As we took those First Baptist Church of Bithlow buildings and started renovating, we added grades over time. And so we have about 70 students, kindergarten through 12th grade now. We've graduated five seniors, four of which are in college, most of which are the first high school graduates in their family's history. And then this year we have four graduating seniors. So
congratulations.
I'm so proud of that, those kids and our staff, and the fact that these guys are just making it happen every day. And where maybe before they didn't imagine graduating high school, now they're all thinking about what can they do beyond high school. And so I just want to point that out.
That's wonderful. Tell us a little bit about this housing thrust that you guys are involved with.
Yeah, so housing is one of our nine areas, but it's really been challenging because it's complicated. Yeah, you know, you probably hear about work happening in low-income communities, and you find out that housing comes, but the people go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a promise that, hey, we're going to build this amazing, incredible apartment building, and we're going to tear down these units that weren't so great, but don't worry, residents, when we're done with that, you'll get to move back in.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people never seem to get to move back in for whatever reason. We didn't want that to happen. We didn't want to gentrify the community. We didn't want to change the semi-rural nature of the community as a result of any of our work. We're not there to develop over the community. So we think the model small house is going to just be a wonderful opportunity for those that want to, that have unsafe housing, to literally replace it unit by unit with a quality house that's similar in size to a trailer. So again, not changing the density of Bithlow, not bulldozing over the community so that things get out of control and the people get pushed somewhere else, but literally keeping the people in the neighborhood while replacing unsafe or inadequate housing with safe, quality, affordable housing, and then adding some housing opportunities to some property that's not being utilized, or maybe it was a blighted, you know, a former junkyard or something that we can turn into a community asset.
Then when you say small houses, Tim, the first thing that comes to my mind would be these TV shows that have the renovation of and the development of tiny houses.
Right.
That's not what you're talking
Absolutely
about.
Absolutely not. So that's why I want to clarify, because people instantly go to tiny houses. I don't want to live in a tiny house, Mike.
Yeah,
I want to live in a house.
200 square feet. I mean, how do you do that?
No. So our first model is about 600 square feet, you know, 7'4" ceilings upstairs and downstairs. In fact, I invite you or any listener to come and take a tour of our model home, because, again, it's just of the scale, a smaller scale, 600 square feet in this example. But the quality is what any of us would want for ourselves. So again, going back to that golden rule principle at first, you know, too often churches and NGOs have a better than mentality. You know, if a person's sleeping on the ground outside, wouldn't it be better if he had a sleeping bag?
Mm-hmm.
If he has a sleeping bag, wouldn't it be better if he had a tent? But yet we then go home to a house. We feel very strongly that if I go home to a house every day, every person should have a chance to go home to a quality house every day. And we think the model small house is going to allow us to have that opportunity.
How many homes will be in this complex?
Well, I mean, like I said, through the generosity of Bayot Cali with Avalon Park Group, we've already got 10 homes funded. We hope to get the funding for maybe 30 homes.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that we did in designing the house is we think it's going to be at a price point that even a church could take an offering and fund a home. So we think for about $50,000, we can build a house that's an appreciating asset. You could get a mortgage on it. I mean, it's a real home, just happens to be small in scale. So the opportunity for us to not wait on government funding and all of these crazy financial instruments that have to come together too often in affordable housing, but really to leverage the goodwill of the community. I mean, too often churches will go and, you know, volunteer and try to do good, but the good is not sustainable. You know, it's great to feed the hungry because the hungry need to eat, but we feel like with safe housing, we can do something that literally will help to transform a family's life.
That's tremendous. That's incredible. All of this is amazing news. What is next for United Global Outreach?
Well, one of the most exciting things for me and for our organization, the past 3 years, we've been hosting international fellows through a couple of fellowships that our U.S. Department of State offers. So I was surprised to know that, you know, you hear about diplomacy, the Secretary of State's doing this, but our embassies around the world in post-communist and emerging countries, third world countries, are really doing incredible work on helping to promote democracy and civil society. So when we became aware of this, we started hosting fellows at BITHLO. They come and study this transformation effort model, and then we go and help them in their country try to duplicate the model, which, by the way, these are already people doing incredible things. For every fellowship, there's usually about 8,000 applicants worldwide, and only 80 are chosen to come for that fellowship. And we've had the privilege of hosting five incredible fellows, from two from Slovakia, one from Albania, one from Romania, and then our latest fellow, James Kokma from Haiti. And so I've been to all of those countries. I've been working with these young leaders, and just so impressed. I really receive more from them than I'm able to give, but they're just doing tremendous work in really, really tough circumstances. All of them committed to seeing their countries and their communities succeed.
Hmm. Now, you've traveled a lot, and you mentioned recently that you went to Haiti. Tell us a little bit about what you see there, what's going on today in that country.
I just wrapped up my third trip in the last 13 months. I went the first time last February, and literally flew in, and we got locked down. So wasn't able to go back again until Thanksgiving, and then again a few weeks ago. And that country, there's just so much opportunity there, so much promise, but the political chaos is just incredible. I mean, there's just, in fact, just this week, some priests and nuns were kidnapped. You know, the week before, an Adventist preacher was literally kidnapped off the stage during the service, you know, and held for ransom there. But James is a guy that took a break from law school, basically took the house that he's been rebuilding since the earthquake 10 years ago, turned mm-hmm. it into a community center, mm-hmm. recognized with the schools not functioning properly, if I don't educate the kids in the neighborhood, then we're going to never move forward. In coming to study what we're doing, I was able to point out to James, it's not okay to just educate a population, because if you only educate them, they'll leave and there won't be anybody to stay and continue the work. We have to work on all of these things. There mm-hmm. has to be housing to stay in, infrastructure, security. And so he's really implemented a broad plan in his community and has been working just in some of the toughest circumstances that I've ever seen. In fact, we're going to get him some money this week because we've been doing a big construction project and he took the gate off of his house. So he literally can't leave his house 24/7 because he's having to defend the property from the gangs that have just really taken over the country in the last couple of weeks. And so he's determined to stay because he believes in the Haiti that can be, not necessarily the Haiti that is. So again, I invite any listeners that might be tuning in that have an interest in Haiti, maybe the diaspora that, you know, has come here from there. I can assure you that this is some frontline work that's going to result in a transformed community and one day a transformed country because of young leaders like James.
I've traveled almost the entire route from Port-au-Prince up toward Cape Haitian, and that route along the way, it's a big one. Would all of this that you're describing be from Port-au-Prince?
Yeah, it's a suburb of Port-au-Prince. So he's in Peachinville, you know. Mm-hmm. So
I've been there.
I'm still learning the geography myself, but just a little enclave that's, you know, urban, really feels urban, but literally, you know, I'm at the convenience store the other day and, you know, 10 guys get out with their guns drawn. You know, who are these guys, James? Oh, they're the, they were kind of approved by the government, kind of not. James was explaining to me, I mean, these guys are going, you know, vendor to vendor, ensuring that everything's okay while collecting money to make sure they're okay. It kind of reminded me of the mob, you know, collecting protection like money. So again, when you're operating under those kind of circumstances with the rampant corruption, it's really hard to make things happen. And James is determined to make a difference and not get sucked into that system. And so it's young leaders like James that I want to support, help, and do all I can to hold their arms up, if you will.
You know, I think about the times that we've gone to conferences and from countries like Haiti, there'd be somebody at that conference and we have this thing, this thought in America that they and their country are experiencing what we do here. And that is never the truth. It's so different.
Absolutely.
These people, what they put up with, what James is putting up with, what he has to deal with on a daily basis. It's just more than what we could ever imagine.
Absolutely. And that's why we need, you know, I encourage more people to get out and travel internationally because we'll be a lot more grateful about what we have going on here. We are so blessed. I mean, on our worst day, it's incredibly awesome to be a citizen of the United States of America and to live here in this great country.
That is well said. Tim McKinney, give us your website, if you will.
It's UGO2.org.
UGO2?
The number 2.org.
.org. Tim McKinney from United Global Outreach, we wish you the best, not only on all of your international, I guess you could say, outreaches that you're doing, like in Haiti and Albania and all these other countries.
And Kenya as well, by the way.
My goodness, you guys are busy. But also in our own backyard in Eastern Orange County and the work that you're doing there with Bithel. This is going to be fun. We'll have to have you stop back in another several months when progress is going on your housing development there and find out what's going on.
I'd love to. Thanks so much for having me, Mike.
It's great to have you here. And friends, thank you for being with us. We'll be back next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.
Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando.